You're listening to WRBH, Reading Radio for the Blind. This is the Public Affairs Show. I'm Carl Arredondo, former chief meteorologist of Channel 4. I am visually impaired. I have retinitis pigmentosa, and I walk with a white cane. On today's episode of the Public Affairs Show, we have a voice that you've probably heard many times here on our station. We have Corey Glore, the voice of Tulane baseball. And if you didn't know, WRBH is a place you can listen to Tulane baseball because we carry their games. Corey, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks for having me on. This is very exciting for me.
Oh, it's great. You know, having the voices of sports on the radio station, it's good to let people know who you are because they hear you all the time. But I want them to get to know a little bit about Corey. So first, a little bit of a history of who Corey is, where you're from, what school, family, whatever you want to share.
Sure. I'm Corey Glore. I've been with Tulane University for now 3 seasons, so this is my 3rd baseball season that you've heard my voice on these airwaves. I was born in Rockford, Illinois, and I lived in that area, which is essentially, if you can picture the state of Illinois in your head, put a thumbtack right where you'd hang it up. If you only had one to hang up a map of Illinois, that's where Rockford is, dead center right at the top. And I was born and raised there my entire life, and I went to school at University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee for a couple of years. Then I transferred to Northern Illinois University, where I graduated in 2010 with a business administration degree, which I have not really used yet, now that I think about it. And I got a job at a radio station right out of college in Janesville, Wisconsin. It was a sports radio station there where I hosted a daily show. I was the producer. I scheduled. I kind of did the tricks of the trade, wear many different hats sort of thing there. But I started calling games when I started working there, and that's when the passion really began for me to become a play-by-play broadcaster. 2014, I moved to Winston-Salem, North Carolina, to work with then known as IMG College, which is a company that oversees about 50, 60 college sports radio broadcasts and radio networks. And I worked as a producer and a pregame and postgame show host there for a few years. And then off of that, I started working at East Carolina University in Greenville, North Carolina, where I started calling their baseball games in 2016. And I was there for 6 years. And then in 2021, I talked to the folks here at Tulane University as they were looking for a new broadcaster, and I came over that summer, and I've been doing football, men's basketball, and baseball here with Tulane ever since. And so I've been in New Orleans now for almost 3 full years by this point.
2 quick questions before we move on to the good stuff. As a young boy, were you interested in maybe listening to the radio and calling games, or what got you interested before you really got into that part of it? And the second question is, once you moved to New Orleans, what was your first impression? Was it a culture shock? Was it, wow, what were your first impressions of New Orleans?
So the first question is the one I'll take first. This is where you can slap a little bit of a nepotism label on me, if you like. My dad has been a television broadcaster in Rockford since before I was born, and so I've always had that knowledge of it. I was never interested in it, though, until college. And even the local TV route, as you know here, Carl, as you just mentioned here at the start of the show, that is a different animal. And he was, when I was growing up, he was working weeknight sports in Rockford, and then he shifted to morning news, which is where he still is today. He's still working at the same station he's been at the whole time. And the schedule was never appealing to me. I never really liked the fact that when I was out in public with my dad, people knew him and would stop him. And so I was never interested, but I always kind of knew about the world a little bit. It wasn't until college when, frankly, I just started working at this radio station when the idea started to flicker. I originally went to school to be an actor, and then I switched to business administration because I was like, I need to do something a little bit more concrete. And so it wasn't until I actually got my feet going in the radio world where I realized that maybe I can work with something here. When I first got to New Orleans, I'd been here before with East Carolina because East Carolina and Tulane are in the same league. And so I'd been to Tulane a couple of times to call some baseball games, and I fell hard for the city when I first showed up in 2016. And it was this perfect melding of events where the weather was beautiful that weekend. that was French Quarter Fest weekend. And so I got to go down and experience that. I had my first crawfish ever that weekend. Todd Graffanini, who fans know well, I had gotten to know him over the years. And so he took me to there was a coach's clinic happening atop Yeoman Stadium after a baseball game, and went over there, had crawfish, beautiful night, experienced French Quarter Fest, did the whole shebang that a tourist kind of would do. And I fell hard right away for the city. So I knew a little bit about it when I first got here. 2 months in is when Ida hit, when I first moved here. So that was that culture shock, and that was that switch there. But the way this city runs, the heartbeat of this city is so unique that I was drawn to it before I even got the job here.
Oh, man, that's great. Going back to a little bit of what you said, my son can relate to you because he's got the same name as I do.
Yeah.
So everywhere we went, people stopped us. And now people ask him, hey, is that your dad? You know, because if he's on his own and he's got the same name, they always ask if he's related, of course. So anyway, let's go back to last year. How did recap Tulane's season last year as far as baseball goes?
It was tough. It was a tough year. And it was a year that featured a ton of growing pains for a very young team and a first year coaching staff. They finished the regular season 15-39, but then in the conference tournament, they ripped right through it and won the conference championship. So they wound up back in the NCAA tournament. And so that experience has really translated to what we've seen the first half of this year, which has been a really good start to the year. And a lot of the guys who experienced last year's struggles now kind of know how to avoid them this year. And you've seen that pan out. There's an entirely new pitching staff that has really taken a step forward this year as to what we saw last year. And I think the coaching staff has now kind of figured out the ups and downs of managing a long baseball season. And last year was a lot more downs. This year has been a lot more ups. And so to see the switch from last year to this year has been really awesome to see. And I don't know if this happens without that run that they did in the conference tournament last year, and they made it back to the NCAAs.
What players are we looking out for this year? I know from the start of the season to now, today's April 1st. So what players do we want to look for or having a good start of the season? So tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I think the biggest name right now that has jumped out for Tulane and the pitching staff has been Chandler Welch, who's a local kid, Slidell kid. His dad pitched for Tulane in the early 90s, David, and he has been just outstanding in weekends right now. He has really been the ace of this staff. And he's got a really strong bullpen around him, a couple of starters that have started to emerge here as well, but they feel really great about Chandler on a Saturday handing things off to guys like a Trey Sahajic, who's 6'8", 243. He's a huge human being, and he's got a mid-90s fastball. Jacob Moore has been great as a closer. He transfers in from LSU Eunice. The pitching staff has really evened out, which has been great to see, and guys like Luke Flatta, who's done good work to start off weekends, they've all really impressed so far. At the plate, T.O. Banks is the biggest name. He's the preseason conference player of the year, and he struggled to get going. The first month or so of the year was a real battle. Now you're seeing signs of him really turn it on. He mashes the ball. He's in his junior year, so he's probably going to get drafted at the end of this year. He's eligible to draft. So is our first baseman, Brady Marget, who's been very consistent. He's a Milwaukee kid, 6'5", just your typical, you know, pro-level first baseman. And so these guys have really centered the lineup around some new faces like a Marcus Klein at shortstop, a Connor Rasmussen at second, Colin Tuff, the catcher, transfers in from Virginia. He's been terrific at getting on base so far this year. And a Brock Slayton in right field, who transfers from Delgado just up the road. He's a Baton Rouge kid. It's some nice work in right field. So a lot of names have stepped up that fans might not remember from last year, but there are a couple of centerpieces from last year's club that have really made an impact.
Now, Tulane has a great program, and we know that. And you just mentioned the transfers. So it's a program that players would definitely want to come to if they have that opportunity to.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, we were just a couple weeks ago, we were at Rice, and it was a similar type program there for a while, kind of running alongside Tulane and their success at the same time. Rice has really dropped off. And it's been a shame to see, but Tulane still has the clout in college baseball. And so there were a lot of transfers that came in this year and have really bolstered this club, and in part because Tulane still has that allure to it. The facilities are top notch. I think what they did at the end of last year caught a lot of people's attention and realized that they wanted to be a part of that. And so it's been an appealing destination for folks to come in and continue their college baseball careers. And that's been how the sport has gone now, Carl. It's a lot more find guys who have a couple years under their belt and bring them in as transfers, less so as the true freshmen coming in. And so you're seeing this happen a lot around college baseball. And this team this year is a lot older than the one that Tulane fielded last year. And that's been a huge reason why you're seeing things really change in terms of wins and losses.
Give us your contact information, any social media handles you want to give out. How can people listen to you or follow you on social media?
Yeah, so Twitter, X, however you want to call it. On that side, it's at Corey Glor, CoreyGlor. That's the same thing on Instagram. Those are the two primary ones that you can find me on. And I'm always on game days, I'm promoting when the broadcasts are happening. And you know, WRBH is always on my posts and whatnot. So, and of course, the fans around the world can listen to these broadcasts, whether they're here in New Orleans on 98.3 or on the various apps that we make the broadcasts available, like the Varsity Network app, Tulane Athletics app, the TuneIn app with the WRBH channel. I hear from folks all the time about listening around the world. And with what you guys have been able to do with the signal boost the last couple of weeks. And now I got fans of the North Shore saying I can hear it loud and clear now, which has been great to see. I know it's been a battle for you guys here. But yeah, so those are the ways to listen. And it's great to hear from fans around the world that are tuning into these broadcasts and the various different ways that they're available.
What kind of comments do you get on social media about the games? Are a lot of armchair quarterbacks, or are they very positive? What kind of feedback do you get on social media?
Oh, I think it's natural to get a little bit of feedback and criticism. That's just part of the deal and part of the job and part of this line of work where it's, again, as a former meteorologist, if you had the social media day and age, you'd probably hear a lot about it. But no, I mean, it's fun to hear from fans. It's fun to know that they're listening. And because I know if they're listening, they care about this team, they care about this school. And so the things that I'll hear, like last week I was at Southern Miss, and for the first time in my baseball broadcasting life, a foul ball came into my booth and I didn't make the catch. And so I heard about that quite a bit over the last few days, about not making the play on the ball. And it's fun to have that interaction. It's great to have a foot in the door of people who really care about the program and want to hear it do well. And if they're taking the time to listen to me, to hear the story of this team, that means the world to me.
Now, I've lived here almost 33 years now, so I know I've followed Tulane baseball throughout the years, and I know the ups and downs that they've had and the rivalry with LSU and how I would believe Tulane fans always believe that they're second thought to LSU because it's the bigger program. But it's good to see that the following is there. I mean, I've known Tulane fans and alumni that they're diehards for Tulane baseball, football, basketball, whatever it is.
Well, it's, and especially the last couple of years, I think when football has taken the rise that it has, but I would probably put out there that Tulane baseball has been the most consistently successful program in the university, and the one that I think still has the deep, fervent fan base that remembers the World Series runs in the early aughts and knows the Rick Jones era and what this program was for that long stretch of time, and wants this program to be back at that level. And so I think the passion has always been there for Tulane baseball, and it's been warranted because of the success that they had. And now to see where football is right now and just the deep obsession that people in the city have had with that program, and it's starting to bleed over to the other programs now, and you can feel it in the buildings, you can hear it on the broadcast, just what the fan base is towards all these programs. It's been great to see, as someone who's still relatively new to the area and the experience of Tulane and New Orleans, to see it rally behind all the Tulane athletics programs has been great.
Let's go behind the microphone just a little bit. How do you prepare?
This is scary.
How do you prepare for a game? What kind of notes do you take? What kind of sheets do you have? Tell folks how that process goes. When Paul Boron was here for ladies basketball, he brought in a sheet, and it had a whole – I mean, it looked like one of those cards that NFL coaches have that they cover their mouths with. I mean, so
spotting
much.
Chart. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So talk about how you prepare for a game.
So baseball is a little different. I don't necessarily have that type of chart that you saw from Paul where it breaks down player by player, but I am hand keeping score during the course of a game. So that's the first element. I got a scorebook in front of me. And then essentially what I've done for baseball is I will handwrite notes on a legal pad for the opposition and then for Tulane, just kind of have them sitting separately in front of me. So I'll have generic team stuff of what their record is, where they are. You know, we just played UTSA over the weekend and they're the best hitting team in the league. So I make sure I notate where they are in the league in certain categories like that, where their struggles are, background on their head coach, and then look at kind of their primary players, what their starting lineups are going to be, and I'll go deep into their bios and their recent games for player by player so that when I hit the air, it's not just the fact that I know Tulane's side, I also know who the opponent is going to be. That's important to me that, you know, if you're listening to me, you think I know something, I got to at least act like I do. And so to get to know the opponent is critical first, and that'll take me a day or so to really get where I want to be with that. And then for, you know, the Tulane side of things, you know, I was able to sit down with the coaching staff before the year and essentially get scouting reports on everybody. And for our pitchers, what they throw, what they're looking for, what type of role they saw initially, how that's changed now that we're halfway into the year, and then get to know the team a little bit as the year has gone on. It's important for me to be around the group, to be around batting practice before a game and be around the shell there at home plate so I can talk to the guys, get to know them a little bit. Travel is important, so I'm around them all the time. So I can get to know them personally a little bit too, and that's important for me. I think I fill my broadcasts with that type of stuff, at least I try to. And so, you know, that combined with the recent game trends that I try and make sure I work in, it's pivotal for me for that type of broadcast, for a baseball broadcast where there's a lot of time to talk, to really know who these guys are, you know, beneath just the jersey that they wear. So it's, you know, getting ready for a game like tomorrow night against Texas Southern, it's going to be, you know, I'll take a day to really dive into the Tigers and what they are and then tweak the things that I know about us and what we've been doing so far and hopefully work them together into a pretty decent broadcast.
How are players nowadays? Are some players more approachable than others, even opponent teams? How does that work? Is there a relationship? You don't have to give any names, of course, but is there some, you know, players you know that are more easily approachable and want to talk and others that are more shy and don't give a lot of information?
Sure, that's natural. I think you're talking about a roster with around 40 guys plus a staff too. And so you do get to know who is more open to these types of conversations, who is interested in having those types of conversations, who would like to kind of stay a little bit more private. It's a little bit harder to communicate with, and that, you know, you got extroverts and introverts, you know, combined into one dugout. And so, yeah, you do kind of, you know, for me personally, you do have, you know, it's not necessarily a list that you're running, but you do know, like, yeah, you know, I can go up to this guy and have an open conversation about the sport, or I can go up to this guy and talk about anything but the sport. And so you do kind of adapt that a little bit. I'm always sitting there and listening to certain guys talk and thinking, you know, you'd be pretty good at broadcasting. Like it's just something like that's happened over my time doing this as well. But it's natural. Yeah, you got a wide range of people in a baseball dugout, and each of them communicates in a different way. So it's fun to get to know guys in that manner too.
In the time you've been calling the games for Tulane and even before, how has there been a change in baseball, the rules, and is it the same game or it goes through trends? Tell me about the evolution of baseball that you've been calling so far.
You know, I think by and large, college baseball has stayed pretty consistent from when I started in 2016. I think the biggest change that's happened has been the pitch clock. Games do tend to move a little bit more quickly now because there's a 20-second pitch clock, and I think that's great for your board ops back here over the years who have had to sit through four-hour games on weeknights over the years, and that those are few and far between now. And so that has added a little bit more of a rhythm to a college baseball game. You know, there's no doubt that the evolution of transfer portal and college sports has been huge for baseball and huge for how Tulane has to build their roster too. There's still 11.7 scholarships of your 35-40 man roster, so there's not a lot of full rides to throw around in baseball, unlike a football or a basketball where you can hand out a lot of those scholarships. So you have to be diligent with how you build a roster, and using the portal is a huge element to doing that. You know, NIL is thrown around a lot in college sports, and it is very much here. And however you feel about it, it is vital to, frankly, building out a team and keeping a roster together. And so that side of it has definitely influenced, I think, the construction of a roster and retaining guys. You know, you got a lot of guys who will transfer out after a good year, depending on where they are. Or, you know, Tulane has had a lot of success on the baseball side of finding guys who are at, you know, nationally prestigious programs like a Virginia or a Mississippi State that didn't get a lot of playing time there, and bringing them to Tulane and essentially giving them a chance to really shine. And that has worked out extremely well. It's been that way for football and basketball too. And so there's ways to really utilize the portal and NIL to your benefit at a school like Tulane. And I think we've seen it pan out.
So you mentioned the transfer portal. You mentioned the pitch clock. Something else I've noticed in college sports that's changed recently, or I don't know how recent it was, but where players can start making money off their name. And has that affected college baseball as much as college football? Have you seen that in any college baseball teams?
Yeah, I mean, NIL is in the Tulane baseball program. The Fear the Wave Collective has been terrific at working with the university at providing all these resources for people in all sports, not just the football. You know, and they're very much involved with football, but there are a lot of guys in the baseball program that do have some NIL deals, and I think it is pivotal for the way college baseball is set up. You know, I mentioned kind of slightly offhand the 11.7 earlier, and I'll dive into that because your listeners might not know, but of a 35-man roster, there are only 11.7 full scholarships available for the whole roster, which means a lot of guys are getting 20% of a scholarship, and they're responsible for the other 80% to come to school. Well, NIL can help offset a little bit of that, and so Tulane has really been able to utilize that pretty well here to build their baseball program. It is not a cheap school to go to. And so, and with so few scholarships available for the baseball program, ways to circumvent the tuition costs are pretty key to constructing a baseball roster. And that's something that Jay Ullman, the head coach, has really had to maneuver around in his 2 years doing it here, because, you know, there are a lot of full scholarships in football, but there are not in baseball. And so ways to, you know, bring the folks in that you know can succeed on the field and also succeed at this academic university, finding ways to make sure that you're able to bring them here and give them a chance to thrive, it's critical for Tulane baseball.
Awesome. What do you like best about your job? What do you like least about your job?
I love being able to tell stories, and that's essentially what I see of what I do, regardless of the sport. Like, I'm telling a story of that program. I'm telling the story of the people behind that program, and getting to do that in a very fun manner is a blast. I've always said that I work in the toy section of a department store. I work very hard to make the toy section as good as possible, but when push comes to shove, I mean, this is not work when you can put a headset on. You can just talk about sports and talk about people doing it. The hardest part of the job, you know, there are certain times of year, and a WRBH knows as well, from middle of February to middle of March, when the sports start colliding on the calendar, and you're winding down basketball season but starting a baseball season, or you're winding down football but starting a basketball season. And the schedule and the travel can get daunting and can get a little bit draining. And so, you know, managing that while also preparing in the way that I would like to prepare to make sure that broadcast is great as possible can involve a lot less sleep over the course of a couple of weeks. And, you know, you guys air women's basketball and baseball for us. There's about a 4-week stretch in which there's pretty much a broadcast every night on your airwaves here. So, you know it well. But it can get a little exhausting at that time of year. But then you put the headset on and you turn on the mic, and you know, suddenly you're on the air and you realize just how much fun this whole endeavor is. It's a blast to do, and I wouldn't trade it for anything.
I definitely understand what you're saying, because I'm 60 and I can say I've still not worked a day in my life.
Yeah.
Because whether I was a meteorologist or a certified orientation mobility specialist, I'm a CrossFit coach, an adaptive coach. I work here now at WRBH hosting this show and helping with fundraising. So I haven't worked a day in my life. So I consider that do something you love doing. And yeah, you can tell by listening to you that you love what you do.
Yeah, it's you know, I didn't know I would fall into this world. Even my dad, the broadcaster, didn't push me into it. And he was like, you know, find your own path. And I found it into here. And I'm not good at anything else, Carl. So I love this, and I'm going to stay loving it because it's a joy to do this, and a joy to do this for a school like Tulane and do it in a city like New Orleans that just backs it with all their might.
Well, you got that business degree to fall back on. Don't you?
Just general business. I'll find something to do.
It doesn't work out. Give again your handles for your social media for folks to follow you, or if they don't listen to this airways for the games, but they can follow you on social media.
At Corey Glor, CoreyGloor on Twitter/X and Instagram. Yeah, by all means, give me a follow, and you know where to hear this voice on springtime and for what WRBH has meant to Tulane. It's irreplaceable. This relationship predates me by a long ways. And we couldn't do what we do without the work of you guys here.
Well, we appreciate it, Corey, because we know that, as you say, you're telling a story, but you're also painting a picture for those that are listening to the radio and those that don't have vision at all, because they're listening to your voice, they're listening to your descriptions, and you're painting that picture for our listeners that are visually impaired or blind. So it's appreciative, because we know what you're doing is bringing everybody else into the game that they're not attending.
Well, thank you, Carl. I appreciate it. That's step one of what I try to do, is make sure you feel as though you're there in some respect, you know what's going on, and hopefully there's a little bit of entertainment around the way.
Well, Corey, thank you for joining us for this. And again, you can follow Corey on social media, listen to him here on WRBH when Tulane baseball is playing, because we carry their games. Corey, thank you.
Thank you, Carl. This was fun.
All right. You've been listening to WRBH, Reading Radio for the Blind. This has been the Public Affairs Show. I'm Carly Redondo. Thank you for listening.